Hey everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster. This is this is the light summer version of the Friday Filibuster, and light in being probably light on compelling content, but definitely light on personnel, as Eric Eschlager is out getting ready for his family vacation. But fear not, we have Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
And Daryl Loomis.
Hidey-ho.
Myself, David Johnson, here to kill some time, and if that is quality time we're killing is yet to be seen. But Mac, why don't you kick us off? Do you have what have you brought to the table today?
Let's see. Well, I'm still stuck living in the hotel.
Okay, good.
Probably for at least another 2 weeks, if not more, I'm going to be here. So, yeah, basically my life has become Eloise at the Plaza.
Nice. And, have you got wacky hijinks with the hotel staff yet, you know?
Oh, all kinds of wacky hijinks. Yeah, me and Zach.
Yeah. Life is a 60s French movie.
Yes.
That's right, yeah. Me and Zach and Cody, we're causing all kinds
of trouble. Great, yes, that's right. Sweet life, baby.
Max Life, written by Henry Miller.
But yeah, just, again, my movie watching is reduced to whatever I can find on cable. And the cable channels, they're all trotting out Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Really?
It's on every time I put on the TV. So this was the first time I'd seen it since it was in theaters, and my opinion is still the same. It's that it's not as awful as everyone says it is,
right?
But it's still nowhere near as good as the original three. So it's, in my view, it's kind of in the middle.
Gotcha.
I love the 1950s stuff, that sort of nostalgia for adventure stories of that era. So, you know, yeah, we've got the aliens and the flying saucer, we've got communists, and we've got ESP experiments, and of course we've got the nuke, and all that 50s sci-fi stuff is cool, and I like that. It just, it doesn't quite fit in with the indie, you know? I'd rather see, like, an original 50s era hero going on this adventure instead of indie. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know, I just loathe that movie from top to bottom.
Do you?
It's just like, actually, not from top to bottom. Actually, I won't say that because there was a lot of stuff I did like. Like, I liked the car chase in the beginning. You know, I thought there were some good indie moments. And even something as goofy as the nuke the fridge stuff didn't bother me. But, like, the monkey swinging thing really killed, like, really hurt. You know, the whole swinging with monkeys with Shia LaBeouf, that was rough.
Isn't anything with Shia LaBeouf?
That's true.
Rough.
Absolutely. So
then, I mean, his name rhymes with rough.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yes.
I don't think you can trust a guy whose name rhymes with rough.
So I think there was just too many, like, these moments, like Marion coming back just seemed kind of contrived, and like they're going over the waterfall in that truck, which was weird, and then Indy's in quicksand, so like they throw him a snake, which I don't know. I remember that?
Yeah, the snake.
I mean, I like the guy getting eaten by the fire ants. That's okay. And Cate Blanchett was pretty cool, but oh man, I just,
what's the point?
I think just tonally, it just, like, I won't even say that he was too old or anything, because I think there was a story you could have done a decent story with him, you know, as an aging adventure or whatnot. But
sure.
I think just tonally, it just was. Really,
the problem, part
crazy.
Of the problem, isn't it that they had just, I mean, not just, but in their previous installment, done that?
I guess. I suppose.
I mean,
yeah.
It's, all they're going to do is just rehash, whatever it's called. Stupid one.
Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Whichever.
It really is crazy looking back. I mean, like, how far Shia LaBeouf has fallen, right? I mean, I guess that a lot of that's self-inflicted. I mean, this is, we're not going to go into gossip time here, but it's just, it's like, it seems just impossible for these young Hollywood stars to emerge unscathed. Quick, tell me, what was it? Quick ambush topic. Give me a young childhood star that has not gone completely off the rails.
How far back?
I don't know. As far back as you remember, like a childhood star you remember watching.
Okay, this is maybe farther back than you want.
Okay,
but Danica McKellar.
Okay, good one.
Was
that's perfect.
Winnie Cooper on The Wonder Years.
I mean, really though. I mean, did any of those people on The Wonder Years really go off the rails? I mean, I know Fred Savage maybe.
Well,
maybe didn't capitalize on a career.
Jason Hervey was
a
writer for World Championship Wrestling.
There you go.
A part investor, and appeared while he was on the show, like as a 17-year-old or whatever, as a front row guy who, and it was weird. It was weird when I was a kid and I was watching The Wonder Years watching wrestling, but even watching it now, or relatively recently. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think that kid was like, he's the Todd Bridges of that show.
Paul became Marilyn Manson, right? At least that's what we learned growing up.
That's the urban legend.
That's the urban legend.
Right, of course.
I would say that the, I was going to say like the Saved by the Bell crew, but I don't think so. Like Dustin
Elizabeth
Diamond
Berkeley.
Obviously imploded.
Dustin Diamond.
Elizabeth Berkeley kind of, obviously, we know what happened. You know, I mean, she didn't, I don't know if she hit
She didn't go off the rails necessarily, but.
She made some, she got pigeonholed
made
in several.
Yeah, I mean, she did a Woody Allen movie. She's done stuff.
And she's done a Spike Lee movie, and she's also done, like, cult movies, so.
I think Tiffany Amber
Thiessen. And the guy who played Zach Morris, he was on a lawyer show.
That's right, Mark Paul Gosselaar. He's kind of crafted a decent cable TV niche, and Mario Lopez is like the man as far as Entertainment Tonight. So I guess
Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Yeah, yep.
Turned out fine, it seems.
I mean, Lark Voorhees did something crazy to her face, but I don't think she like ran over anybody with a car or anything.
Yeah, you got Dustin Diamond being gross.
Yes.
And Elizabeth Berkley making some
questionable
if cultishly popular choices.
I think I'm going to give the title belt to Candace Cameron.
Really?
I'm going to give her the title belt because, she's by far, she's like, of all the kids on that show, she's by far like the best looking as far as an adult goes. I think she was the most awkward, chubby looking one, you know, as a kid, but. When the adulthood set up, I think she's the best looking.
What else has she been in?
She's Make It or Break It, Mac. Make It or Break It.
She's also, when you contrast things, like the whole Different Strokes kid crew.
True.
Were a bunch of screw ups.
Yeah, that's true.
But when you look at you got the Olsen twins. Such a weird dichotomy, I guess, on that show. You got the Olsen twins who became like the richest children in the world, but are totally screwy.
Yeah.
You've got Jodie Sweetin, who had
she
her
went
problems.
Through a stress, right? Yeah, she did.
She had her issues.
She did have her issues. I think she
that
bounced
were serious.
Back, but yeah,
she has apparently bounced back in a good way, that's great. But she certainly had her issues,
right.
And then Candace Cameron, who's been like, I don't know. An actual person.
That's the thing. She's an actual person, right? So she's like, she acts a little bit. She was on Dancing with the Stars. She married
some
a special hockey
little.
Player. You know, she's like.
She's a minor star who gets invited to.
But she just seems like the most normal. Like, when I see interviews or I read interviews, she just seems
And then when you look at her brother, who, you know, regardless of one's individual faith, is kind of a crackpot.
Sure. I think he takes it. See, now what's in – now talk about contrast, Daryl. So where Kirk Cameron probably takes it a little too far, Candace Cameron's a pretty devout Christian herself.
Sure, I would imagine so.
I think she's someone you can, like, sit and have a coffee with, right? And not feel like you're getting crowded with anything.
Right.
So,
right. Maybe just a glass of milk.
Maybe a glass of, a glass of
I don't think there's much harder going on with Candace Cameron.
I don't know. She's maybe a hockey player, though. I think those hockey players drink hard.
That's true.
I'm going to guess they got something slightly, slightly proof.
That's fair enough. Maybe,
So all this is just a sneaky way of me saying that I think, Candace Cameron – I think I love Candace Cameron. That's all my. But it's tough making that jump from because if you remember the Full House phenomenon was like Jodie Sweetin, cute, adorable little kid who kind of turned into an awkward teenager, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So
and the Olsen twins who kind of turned into split Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah. Weird. Right. Weird.
I think they made a movie about that back in the 70s where Jekyll and Hyde were split. But we're basically twins.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's life imitating art.
Yeah.
Because especially since you've got Elizabeth Olsen, who seems perfectly normal.
Elizabeth Olsen.
The younger sister.
That's right.
She's a couple Olsen, pretty.
Right. Wait, Elizabeth Olsen is.
Elizabeth
Godzilla
Olsen.
Actress,
it's
right?
Ashley.
So,
I didn't know that.
Silent House and.
Really, Elizabeth Olsen is part of the Olsen family, huh?
Yeah, she's the younger sister.
Martha, Mary, Marlene, that movie, right?
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth Olsen was in Godzilla.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I just learned something. I had no idea.
And it seems like a perfectly normal and and not monstrous. So, and they kind of look the same. So it's clear that they were, that the Olsen twins themselves were actually born and not like pulled out of a tube, which it seems like sometimes.
True. Yes. Or like built. You know, they were created out of a mixture of lightning and corpse parts strapped to a tower. You know,
yeah,
journey.
Yeah. But then, like, how do you then make a normal human being through regular means?
That is the question.
And have it look the same. So, you know, I just think that something went weird in that womb somewhere.
Yeah. All right. But I think we got to end this conversation now.
Sorry, Mary Kate, Ashley. I really don't mean to sound so mean.
Really, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well,
this is a Friday filibuster. We tackle the big stuff. So, I don't. I think we left off with Mac living in a hotel room. So pick it up, Mac.
Just stuck in the hotel watching cable, watching Indiana Jones. That's where I'm at with my movie watching.
All right.
Poor Shia LaBeouf all started this whole thing.
Shia LaBeouf.
Ashley, you can blame Shia LaBeouf.
That's right. Yeah. And I will say this. We talked a little bit about Transformers 4 last week. I will say I think I said this last week, but to hammer the point home, just the mere absence of Shia LaBeouf and all that around him made Transformers 4 that much better. And though better probably isn't the right word for it, maybe that much less vomitous, perhaps. I guess that'd be the, you know what I mean? So, like, that's, because I was just, I was flicking through Dark of the Moon, and I was reminded that there's so much unwatchable stuff in between, like, the robot fighting, you know? So.
Yeah.
A lot of it revolves around Shia LaBeouf. So.
In a weird turn, there's a Middle Eastern restaurant here in town that I've been to 4 or 5 times, and at least 3 of those times, on the televisions around on the walls, Transformers 3 is always playing.
Really?
Yeah. So I've seen it silent, probably in its entirety, twice. While eating Middle Eastern food. So anyway,
wow.
That is what it is.
Sounds like something you should experience and then journal about immediately and put it on a blog somewhere.
It happened again.
Yes. Okay, Daryl, what do you got then?
All right. So
unless that was it. I may have been.
Would have been pretty great.
Yeah.
Because I've been eating a lot of Middle Eastern food lately. Last week I was excited but hadn't watched a found footage horror movie called Afflicted.
Yes.
And watched it, which is my job. And I highly recommend it, especially to you, Dave.
Okay.
It's a found footage movie in the traditional sense, but it's it takes more of an action approach. So there's these two guys, and they're the director, Derek Lee. The director is Derek Lee and Cliff Prowse, starring as themselves. And they go on this world tour, whatever, for no good reason. And, there's a good reason, I guess, but it's not logical. But anyway, they don't make it very far. Derek Lee goes out with a French prostitute, and it's basically a vampire type situation.
All right.
But very shortly into the movie, Derek Lee, feeling his vampire urges, this is really not a spoiler, eats his friend. And then he starts, Interpol is after him. He's gained these superhuman powers. Jumping, running super fast, being able to beat the crud out of stuff. And so has a camera strapped to his chest.
Wind tunnel there.
Yeah, somebody's got run over by a truck.
Yeah, we're back. All right.
All right. So the camera's strapped to this guy's chest as these crazy stunts are going on. So, Dave, do you remember the opening sequence of Far Cry 3?
Sure.
It's that.
All right, nice.
In a very real way, it's like, you know, running, jumping, going around blind corners, all from the first person, and it feels like a video game. It doesn't feel like a horror movie at all, but it's effective and fun as heck.
All right.
Totally recommend.
All right.
Sounds interesting, yeah.
Not a great movie necessarily. It's really almost not even horror, but it's fun enough that, yeah, I could recommend it to easily to action fans. I mean, it's first-person action like a video game. What more do you mean?
Usually I'm not a fan of the first-person action stuff at all, but or the first-person, like, you know, found footage stuff, so.
Did they ever do first-person for action, like, for real?
They did one section in Doom. Yeah. The Carl Urban, Dwayne Johnson movie. There's one hyped section in Doom where
it's like a 10-minute scene.
Yeah.
It seems like a match to do, like...
you would think, but, like, those 10 minutes got old pretty quick, so.
But if you do it, Raid Redemption...
That'd be interesting.
That'd be a trip, yeah. Which
I'm looking forward to seeing Raid 2. I have not seen it yet.
That's right.
Oh, you've got to see it.
It's out there now. Yeah, I'm looking forward to
it. There was Chronicle. Chronicle was found footage and had a big action scene at the end.
Okay. It seems like a natural... I mean, it's such a natural for video games. People have eaten it up for video games ever since Doom or Wolfenstein before that. People eat it up, so it seems like it'd be a natural, but... I've never really seen it. Anyway.
Nice. All right. Man, I don't have much. Duck Dynasty 5 I just reviewed, and I guess that's kind of in what's coming out, so I'll save that. But I'm trying to think. It's got to be something. I'm playing an Xbox One game called Guacamelee. That's pretty fun.
Nice.
it's like a Metroidvania game, you know, the whole... you know what that genre is, the Metroid, Castlevania type of genre, some platforming, some combat. It's a lot of fun. I got a pretty great sense of humor. You play like a luchador. hence Guacamelee. So, it was free. It was free with my Xbox subscription. So that's been quite fun.
And you're on Xbox 4 now, right?
Say that again?
Or whatever you call it, Xbox One?
Xbox One, right. So then, yeah. Yep. So that's, okay. that's what I've been rocking. That's been fun. And I guess a couple other quick things. Ridley Scott's Exodus, which I didn't even know was coming. They released a trailer today. Have you guys seen that or heard about it?
Yeah.
Christian Bale is Moses. Sigourney Weaver is like Pharaoh's daughter or something. I don't know. Weird, but we'll see. I mean, it's kind of Daryl, be kind of like what hath Noah wrought.
Well, no, that's right. Yeah, but I mean, it's what we, you know, we were talking about that before, that like the potential for awesome stories is
true.
All over the place there.
And then I've heard like,
why not mine it? And it's never been mined. Not
you're right.
Really.
Can I just say that there was that rumor that Mel Gibson wanted to direct a Maccabees movie?
Oh, God, yeah, I think that's right.
Which, let's be honest, would have been awesome. Mel Gibson directed Maccabees movie would have ruled. But I guess really Scott is interested in tackling like, and to me this is long overdue. I don't know why anyone hasn't thrown some money behind it, but a big-ass feature film version of David. Like, isn't that like a perfect candidate?
Yeah, why not?
It's got everything, right? You got a flawed hero. He's got a fight against his son. You got huge battles. I just, like, to me that kind of would really makes sense. So,
okay, let me throw this out there as I guess a quick ambush topic.
Yes.
How would you handle a Jonah movie?
How would I handle a Jonah movie? All right, I like these ambush. Good, quick ambush topic. So, thematically, it's got to be about like a man. So, okay, it's got to be about a man running from God, right? Like, thematically, that's what it's got to be. And people forget that Jonah ended on a huge downer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people forget about that. In fact, that gets glossed over. For example, with Noah getting blasted out of his head in a cave, right? That kind of gets glossed over in the Sunday school lessons. So Jonah's last chapter is like him sitting on a hill looking at Nineveh and like just totally in the dumper, and I think God like sends some shade and then withers it. I gotta remember, but it like it was
yeah
a
I
total,
haven't read it in a long time
it
so
was a total
know,
downer. So it's not like he ran away, he threw himself in the water, fish ate him, he went preached God's word, everyone lived happily ever after. Now, he did that, but then he just kind of like it just kind of sat and sulked. So I mean, I don't know. I think Jonah would be tough just because it's all building up to the encounter with the fish, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it'd be just too reliant on that. Even though technically Noah was all building up to a flood, so. but I think there was just more.
Yeah, they worked that pretty well.
They did work that pretty well, but I think there was more around Noah's theme, maybe. But I guess Jonah's a possibility, as long as I just give you the whole picture, but it would end on a downer.
It definitely would, which is great with me. But, you know, might not sell a lot of tickets, but, you know.
Yeah, well, it'd be like, I don't know. It'd be the most interesting. I mean, again, Daryl, as we've talked about this, you know, on our Noah podcast, like, that's what makes these stories and characters compelling. Right, was that they were like deeply flawed, and there weren't necessarily happy endings.
No, story. Right. Now, so for me, I don't know if you want to, if you before, since I threw out the topic, Mac, if you want to jump in here with your idea, with an idea. But I think there's two ways to go about this.
All right.
I think you have you either do it so that the whale part is minimized.
Yeah.
But, or the fish part is minimized, but extremely graphic.
Like he's just hanging out in stomachs and intestines.
Oh, and trying to find his way, trying to get his way out. Because you got to, again, let's just like, no way, you got to, you know, expand the story. So it's not like Jonah's just going to be like, yeah, you know, I thank God I brought a pack of cards so I can play solitaire while I'm sitting in this whale.
Yeah, true.
He's going to be fighting his way out and roughing up this whale. You're going to be all on the inside of it, you know, and I think that would be pretty fun, pretty interesting, that I have something I've never seen before, personally. It's like the inner space of horror movies.
True. Good point.
And
I think you got to have Nineveh just be a toilet.
Right. And
like modern day Detroit or something like that.
Yeah, and I think that's the case both ways. The other way is to super minimize the front part and maximize the whale.
Sure.
And have it be, and this is, I think, my favorite idea, like sort of in the realm of like Tetsuo Iron Man or something. Have it be a like hour long existential crisis where he really is sitting in the whale, lamenting his life.
Sure.
But it's like all viscera all around him for like an hour. So he's just like sitting cross legged in his stomach.
Yeah. That's fine.
So I would do it one of those two ways, personally. Given the money.
Given
Noah money.
Yeah, I think just make Noah the reluctant servant. I think that, like, I think he was reluctant till the end, you know?
Yeah.
He was like, okay, God's serious, I better do this thing, you know? And then, so I don't know, I think that could be. I would also think that, I think that going back to the New Testament, like, early church stuff would be an interesting, you know, like, I've always found that a very compelling.
Well, the problem is telling stuff somewhat factually.
Yeah.
Which makes it unpopular in certain crowds.
Well, I think you center around Paul.
You have to.
The dichotomy of Paul, and there's all that bad stuff he was.
There's lots of bad stuff there.
I think that's where that would be Paul.
So I'd be interesting, and I, you know.
Yeah, it would be interesting. It can't be. Have I talked about Son of God on this podcast? I did review that. Did I mention that?
Son of God? I don't. Is that the. No.
So that was like the one that was kind of culled from existing and expanded footage from the Bible miniseries. And it was. So you remember the Bible, the History Channel Bible.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So it is very recent.
Right. So it's very recent, and they just kind of took the Jesus stuff and some expanded stuff and put it together into kind of a milquetoast Jesus movie, to be honest. But it did like decent box office and limited showings. So to your point, Daryl, that shows that there is definitely an interest in seeing this stuff. But but Son of God to me was just like,
oh, so they took the
way to make the story
to put it on the screen.
Pretty much.
Okay.
And it was just kind of another, it felt like a TV miniseries.
I'm slow sometimes.
But they made it a feature film, and it was kind of milquetoast and uninteresting, and like definitely a preaching to the choir. And I consider myself part of the choir, and I was still like nodding off. So whatever. So, yeah.
Well, that's often the problem. And, I mean, that's where, like, I'm not saying that a movie about Jonah with an hour of Jonah sitting in a whale, like, it's like the Antichrist. It's like Lars von Trier's Antichrist, but in a whale.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that would sell to me.
Okay, but that's why nobody's paying me to direct a movie either.
The Interspace option might sell.
Yeah, it's Interspace crossed with Antichrist in a whale.
Yeah.
That's how I sell it.
I need $150 million to do that.
And starring Shia LaBeouf as Jonah.
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf as Jonah. That will definitely.
Watch him suffer for an hour.
That's right.
In guts. You know, I mean.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I think it's a good idea.
And I also will say one final thing. Mac, have you been following The Flash? The show coming to the CW? I've been
a little bit, yeah, just off and on, not really extensively, but following it off and on.
So maybe it was a couple months ago, actually. They put out an extended trailer for it, like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially spoiling the pilot, if you have to know. But it looked kind of interesting. It actually looked something like right up your alley, Mac, to be honest. It had like kind of that playful comic book vibe, which they're going for to differentiate it from the Arrow. Like, same guys to the Arrow are doing this, but, it's more comic book, more light. You know, so it definitely has a different tone and vibe to it. But I have to say, I'm interested by it.
That's good because I think that's kind of the Flash character. He's more of a fun, sort of likable guy next door type of character. And there's been a lot of great Flash stories over the years.
Would you say there's like Spider-Man similarity as far as personality goes between the two?
A little bit, yeah. I'd say Flash is a little bit more kind of positive.
Okay.
It's like
he's
kind of leans a little more towards Superman's personality than Spidey's, as just sort of this genuinely nice guy. But yeah, he still has that sort of guy next door quality. And people say, oh, but his only power is that he runs. But the writers over the years have found a lot of interesting ways for him to use his powers. And I think a weekly series exploring that, they could really do a lot of clever, creative stuff. So
who's the Flash's arch enemy?
Oh, he's got a whole rogues gallery. He's got all kinds of crazy villains. Yeah. Captain Cold and Gorilla Grodd and the whole city of gorillas. Yeah.
Those guys are popping up with my DC card deck building game. I know Gorilla Grodd from that. So he definitely seems like the more fantastical type of hero, right?
Yeah.
If they
embrace the crazy and bring in all the villains, that would be really something. But they'll probably build up to that like they did with Arrow.
Yeah, but don't you think if Arrow is like to be believed, they won't – like, again, to me, Arrow's biggest the biggest points in its favor is the fact that they're generous with their DC Comics property, right? I mean, they're giving you a bunch of they give you Deathstroke and Solomon Grundy and all kinds of stuff. So,
right, but they didn't do it all at once.
They didn't. You're right. They did do a build. Correct.
They built up to it. So I imagine that the plan is the same for the Flash. First, we get to know the Flash. We get to know his world and what he's all about, and then – piece by piece, then we'll bring in the magical city full of gorillas.
Nice. Well, that's right. Well, I have to say, so far, I mean, I don't know if the Flash is going to be good or not, but I think advanced word of mouth has been positive, but I do kind of like what the CW is doing. I mean, I know they get like 500,000 viewers a week for their shows, but still, I like how they're kind of crafting this little mini TV universe with DC properties. I think that's kind of interesting. So, I don't know. So check out the trailer if you can find it. I think,
And Brendan Routh is joining the cast as the Atom.
Yes.
Which is going to be really interesting. So.
The Atom, correct. Okay. How about stuff we got coming for the site? Mac, got anything?
What else have I written that we haven't talked about yet? There's a movie called Tomorrow starring Robert Duvall. He's one of these actors that's... Everybody likes him, but he doesn't really have the passionate fan following. But he says it's one of his favorite movies, and he's really good in it. It's a great performance. The movie was made in 1971, but it was created as if to look like it was from the 30s. So it's all in black and white, and everything's all rustic and stuff. And they really commit to the bit. It's like, if I didn't know, I would have thought it was a 1930s film. So... it's hugely steeped in nostalgia, and the story is a straightforward drama. but that's fine. And all right, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Nice. All right. Daryl, you got anything?
Yeah, real quick. So I reviewed this movie called, I believe it went on the site today or yesterday or something, but it's called Screamers.
All right, fine.
But it's not really called Screamers. It's really called Island of the Fishmen. it's an Italian movie that was bought by Roger Corman and released in the States as Screamers. And that's what you're seeing with some weird, unaffiliated footage on the front end of it. But it's really, for Italian movie fans, it's a middle-era movie from Sergio Martino that is one of the most ridiculous and stupid things that you'll ever see. Mac, you reviewed The Visitor, right?
Yes. That's that crazy Italian movie with the little girl.
Uh-huh, and the basketball game?
Yeah.
it's a lot like that, but if you replace the basketball game with The Secret of Atlantis and the little girl with this Dr. Moreau storyline, it's kind of similar, and which is funny because it's basically kid-friendly if you don't count the stuff that it wound up being Joe Dante that directed the gore footage. In the Corman version. But Sergio Martino is not famous, but has directed two of the funniest names of all time, and longest. One is Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key. In 72. And then in 73, he directed a movie called Torso, but that was the American title. Of the Italian title, which translates into The Bodies Bear Traces of Carnal Violence, which has, in addition, the tagline of one day she met a man who loved beautiful women, but not at all in one piece.
Whoa.
So Sergio Martino has sort of a special place in gross Italian filmmaking. And then he made this super campy, kiddie Fishman movie with Atlantis garbage. And it is what it is. It's a lot like The Visitor. Dave, I don't think you've seen that, but Matt knows what that means.
Yeeks, all right.
It's funny. It's worth watching. It's worth watching.
Very good. All right, well, for me, like I said, I spoiled in the previous segment, but yeah, Duck Dynasty 5, which we've been kind of watching. This is weird. So, like, we get A&E, so we've been tuning into Duck Dynasty. You know, we're not, like, huge Duck Dynasty fans, but I get a kick out of it. You know, it's a nice family-friendly, wholesome show or whatever. But I got this to review, and I thought I had seen the season, and I realized a whole season had aired of a show that I have interest in. I had no idea it was aired.
Wow.
That's weird. Like, it was on. I was like, we haven't seen any of these episodes. So, I don't know. I feel like I kind of woke from a coma or something, right? I really tortured a metaphor in my review, bringing, because I had Transformers again on the brain, so I compared Dark Dynasty to Transformers 4. And, like, my point, and I think it's, Mac, I don't know if you've edited it yet or if you've taken a look at that review. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I'm not sure if I made that point stick. But the idea being, like, you know, you go in knowing what to expect with the Transformers movie, as we talked about last week, right, Daryl? Like, you know what to expect. That's how you're going to keep your distance from it.
I don't want anything to do with it. I know what it is.
So you know. Mac, you know what to expect. We know what to expect with Transformers movies. So if you go in it and then decry it for being something it isn't, I mean, who is that on?
Just being dense.
Yeah, that's on you.
Just being dense, and you're wasting your money. You already know you're wasting your money.
So it's like Michael Bay is not. Yes. Yeah, so it is. Like Duck Dynasty is like, you know what it is, right? You know, it's just like, I mean, I guess it's just a convoluted way of saying how movies have audiences. But to me, like, Duck Dynasty is like, it's not a real reality show. You can tell that there's some scripting going on. The humor's, you know, okay. There's some, it's kind of contrived. But it's good, you know, there's a family and they're rednecks and they love each other and they pray at the end over dinner. Like, that's it, you know? And so, it's just kind of it is what it is. That's what I was saying. So I don't know. I think I really just was setting aflame a straw man I had set up. But by then I was like three paragraphs into the metaphor. It's like I got to keep going with this. I got to get this review knocked out. So yeah. So fair warning, readers. Maybe it's too many words.
Now
too many words.
Now, Now I'm imagining one of the Duck Dynasty guys riding around on the back of a Dinobot.
Yes, right. Which would have been like, I think, an improvement for both.
There's always a Transformers 5.
There'll always be a Transformers 5, and there'll always be Duck Dynasty. And yeah. It is what it is, and so don't.
Neither one is nonfiction.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if you don't like
these guys shooting ducks and like, you know, just kind of.
How
about
many
being
ducks do they shoot? Do like, they really shoot a lot of ducks in this show?
They don't really. Nah, actually, they don't, like this one episode I watched was the first time I'd seen them really with a bunch of ducks in tow. So it's only them just kind of screwing around. So anyway, it's just
what
a light
with the ducks.
Innocuous show. Well, they eat them. They eat everything they hunt.
So oh, well, that's good at least.
Yeah, they look like Phil Robertson lives off the land, so they always eat the ducks. They eat everything. So yeah,
that's.
Yeah, no, they don't mount little duck heads on their, you know, Ford truck.
That'd be awesome.
So I don't know. So Mac, if you have the privilege of editing that
I will.
Actually, this calls to mind a quick bonus anecdote. So man, I don't know how many years ago, 3 years ago, I reviewed Solar Babies. Mac, do you remember that review by any chance?
Very much so. Yeah.
Okay, so Daryl, are you familiar with the movie Solar Babies?
I am not.
Okay, so what is it, Mac? Mid to late 80s, right?
Mid-80s, like 84, 85.
Jason Patrick's in that.
Sci-fi movie. Yeah.
A young, what's his face from Mars Attacks? I don't know. I can't remember. A big ears kid, he's in that. Doug Pettall, yeah. Right? Isn't Doug Pentall in that? He's in this movie.
That's right.
So basically, it's a post-apocalyptic film, and there's no water on the planet, and these kids who are like, you know, like youth are kept in like real parochial prisons, and these kids sneak out at night and they engage in like some roller skating sport, and. So like
the movie makes no sense.
It makes zero sense. They come across an alien that generates water for them, and it's really terrible. So it's a terrible movie. But I for some reason, I decided I was maybe bored that night, so I wrote like a pseudo dissertation on the movie. Like it was like the longest review I've ever written, and I think I threw in fake citations. Like, do me a favor and check out my Solar Babies review, Daryl, and any listeners who are interested. And let me know what you think. Because I worked pretty hard on it, actually. And, you know, I just really, like, the writing side was really obnoxiously academic and all that stuff. And Mike Staley, our glorious chief editor-in-chief, et cetera, had emailed me after the review and said, you know, could you please give me the sources that you cite in this? And I was like, mission accomplished. So that's it.
Damn, that is long. That's a lot. I mean,
that certainly is a lot of words. As JP,
I watch a lot of wrestling. There's not much. There's a lot to look at here.
That's right. There's a So take it.
I'm gonna need Arn Anderson to narrate this for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. See, there's a picture of the Solar Babies with a magic orb.
See that? Yeah.
Oh boy, that was a lot of words here.
Damn, that is a lot of words.
So.
I'm going to say that you gave Solar Babies a fair trial.
That'd be good.
11 of 19 people, including myself,
excellent,
believe it was fair.
That's good. That's good. So please, listeners, vote early, vote often.
I will actually read this at.
Please do. I would bear, yeah. So your homework assignment, Daryl, is to read this and report at a future filibuster. Or read it now and report at the end of this episode. That's fine, too. So.
It depends on how exciting the conversation gets.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. That's that. So, Mac, do we have anything upcoming to look at?
I don't believe so. I think that's in the holding pattern.
Okay,
so I'm going to move ahead.
All right. Okay, so let's just move on to our ambush topics. We will wrap up this fascinating podcast with our go-to segment here: random topics generated for fun and excitement. I'll go first. We happen to be here, Mac, with a special birthday boy, right, Daryl? Your birthday?
Oh yes!
Happy birthday! So,
well, happy birthday.
That's my ambush topic: birthday parties.
Ooh. I am going to go with the opening scene in Shakes the Clown.
You'll have to refresh my memory on that one.
You know, I haven't seen... Would you recommend that movie? I have not seen
it. Okay, so I can say... I can't guarantee that you're going to like it, that you would like Bob Goldthwait movies.
Yeah.
But I do. A lot.
Okay.
Shakes the Clown was the first one. It's kind of amateurish, but it's really funny. And it is like really early appearances with Adam Sandler and late appearances with LaWanda Page. Lots of comedians in the movie. And the first scene, what I'm referring to, is Shakes the Clown waking up the morning after the birthday party he worked with, whose mom was... excuse me for a second while I look at this, because it's been a long time since I've watched it. Waking up having slept with Florence Henderson.
Wow.
He is a drunk clown, and that was his job. He was, doing the Florence Henderson's son's birthday party. And it goes from there. It's Bob Goldthwait's movies are some of the darkest things you'll ever see.
Okay.
World's Greatest Dad with Robin Williams. World's Greatest Dad. I'm not a Robin Williams fan on any real level at all. World's Greatest Dad is one of the best comedies I think of the last decade. It's also one of the most disgustingly dark movies I've ever seen.
That's what I was about to say. It's like super dark.
Yeah. It's super dark. But it's extremely well done, and it's got these great Bruce Hornsberry in the Range jokes that come out of nowhere. It's funny when it needs to be funny, but it's just one of the greatest things. And Shakes the Clown was his first movie. But the guy's legitimately great, and really his comedy special, You Don't Look the Same Either, from a couple of years ago that I reviewed for the site, is I have nearly peed myself laughing at multiple times. It's one of the greatest stand-up specials I've ever seen. So the guy is, to me, pretty great.
All right.
And so, yeah, I would totally recommend Shakes the Clown. And he had sex with Florence Henderson at her son's birthday party, so what are you going to do?
Okay, very good. I don't think you can get better than that, unfortunately. So, all right. Mac has been dropping in and out of our conversation.
Oh, see.
As soon as he gets back, I'll let Mac go. But real quick, can I just say, I just typed in Shakes the Clown in Netflix to see if it came up. And, the streaming content, there's, not a lot of options. Have you never noticed that? Like, Netflix, Amazon Prime, as much as I do like them, if I'm just sitting around thinking, boy, I'd like to see... I remember just thinking, boy, I'd like to see Dogma. I just felt like watching...
Well, when you want particular things, they seem to be rarely there.
That's right. Or I just feel like watching... Yeah, I feel like... Because I watched Clerks 2 for the first time. I was like, I could go for another Kevin Smith movie. And there's just only that and Chasing Amy available, So it's like, eh.
I'd rather drown myself.
Yeah, exactly. So the downfall of video stores has had its unfortunate repercussions.
No, it is unfortunate that way. I guess Redbox takes care of that on a certain level, but I've actually never really used the site.
I'm talking about, the older movies, I don't
know. Yeah, Redbox only has, the big blockbusters.
Right, sure.
All right. Go ahead, Mac. Yeah. Birthday parties? You got anything?
Okay, birthday parties. Yeah, I got bumped. I got spotty hotel wireless, but I'm back. I don't know if you...
Oh, did we lose Mac again?
I don't know either. I'm the suspense.
That's true. Mac, you're back. Go.
I'm back. The 80s slasher movie Happy Birthday to Me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, good.
Which the movie itself is kind of unremarkable, but it had that famous poster image of the guy getting stabbed in the mouth with the barbecue skewers.
Yes.
The food is still on the skewer.
That's right.
So, image was better than the movie.
It was, actually. That was, they kind of blew their wad with it. I think I reviewed that movie. But yeah, I did review it, actually, yes. There it is. There's a barbecue skewer, and it got a solid... Oh, I gave it an 80.
There you go. Happy birthday to happy birthday to me.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. All right, for me, I guess the first thing that popped to mind for birthday party was just the scene in Ghostbusters 2, where Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson work a birthday party.
Oh, yes.
Because they're so down. They're so down and out. And a bonus one would be the birthday party in Seinfeld, where George is having that conversation with Bozo the Clown, and someone thinks there's a fire, and he runs and pushes all the women and children out of the way to get out. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yes, classic.
Yeah, very good. So, yes. So that is that's that for me. Next, Daryl, go.
All right. So I've been trying to scramble while not talking to figure something out. And so I'm going with I did get something, which, you know, it's okay. But I'm going with out-of-place animals.
Out-of-place. Oh, I got it. I got it. Absolutely. All right, yeah, 2-4. Two Naked Gun movies. There was some great animal action. So the first one, Naked Gun, which we've kind of gone to this segment a lot, but when they do the – remember the highlights in the baseball park?
Yes, that's just what I was thinking. Yeah,
the guy gets mauled by what, the tiger or the lion or something, right? In the second base. And then in Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear, I believe, correct? Mm-hmm. Is that The Smell of Fear?
It is.
So the main bad guy is played by, help me out, Mac or Daryl, who is it?
It wasn't Montalban. That was the first one.
That was the first one.
Oh, come on. Will Ferrell did him as a character, too. Oh, who is he? Robert Goulet.
Right. It's Robert Goulet.
So he gets thrown out of a hotel room and, like, lands on the awning, and he seems to be okay. Then he gets mauled by, like, a lion or something because it's a callback gag to when the zoo there was a breakout at the zoo. So So Naked Gun made good use of surprise animal attacks.
Another go-to one that we've mentioned a bunch of times on the podcast is in the movie 300, has the random goat man, for like no reason.
Yes, the random goat man.
Mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when we visit, it's the bad guy, Xerxes, right?
Yes.
And he's got his deluxe tent with, you know, all of his riches and whatnot all lounging around, and the camera pans over, and there's a half-man, half-goat playing some kind of sitar thing. And he's just in that one shot, and then he's never seen again. So,
the movie's funny. I'd like to actually – I haven't seen that movie since I actually watched the theater, which is – given how many movies I see that way, it's pretty surprising. But I'd like to go back and actually watch that again, and because there's some crazy junk going on. That notwithstanding, there's a lot of crazy junk in that movie.
It goes back and forth from being really super stylized to be – really just kind of plain and dull, and then back to being super stylized. So it's that kind of – it's hills and valleys in that movie.
Yeah, it's just those little moments like this, like the goat man, I think that make that movie really strange. Like if you look at the crowd scenes, I think I would imagine there's some weird stuff going on in there. Or at least I would hope so, given some of the strange things that are there.
Huh. All right, that's 2 years.
All right, so I've actually got 2 real quick. One that I already had, sort of, and one that came to me. The one that came to me was, since there hasn't been an Arrested Development reference today, the ostrich in the new season living at the Bluth condo.
Oh, that's right.
But the other one, which is actually my favorite one, is... the movie that Tobe Hooper followed up Texas Chainsaw Massacre with, a movie called Eaten Alive with Neville Brand and a young Robert Englund, where he's a hotel owner, Neville Brand, and feeds tenants or whatever, dogs sometimes, whatever, to a crocodile that lives under his house or his hotel. A lot of people hate that movie. I love it. It has one of my favorite scenes in all of horror. I won't describe it because it'll take too long, but it's chaotic and makes you want to go crazy. And that's where Tobe Hooper was at his best. And it's kind of a crappy movie, but it's got a few great bits. And
it's kind of an endurance test. Yeah.
It is kind of an endurance test, but you know what I'm talking. It's the you've seen it, Mac.
Yeah.
So it's when Robert Englund is trying to assault the woman while the little girl is being chased by the crocodile under the house, and upstairs the husband is trying to pull his eye out while the wife is screaming at him. All the while,
stuff like that. It's all just ugly and grimy and oh man.
So yeah, Eaten Alive, Crocodile.
Good.
It's rad.
Very good. All right, Mac, finish it up.
All right. So mine is surprise plot twists that make absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Ooh.
And spoilers. So there you go.
Spoilers. Okay, I will not go with High Tension, so I'm going to force myself to go elsewhere.
Okay, yeah,
that's my
fair.
Go-to one. So let's see here. Surprise, surprise. Well, man. Okay, let's see.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and go with one that is actually a movie that I really like. And people might argue with me about it, I guess. But I'm going to go with the end of Halloween.
Really?
After 85 minutes of, I'll try to be brief here.
All right.
But when Michael Myers breaks out of the insane asylum, all he is an insane person. He's not necessarily like psychotic. He doesn't kill the nurse who tries to run away in the car, where he jumps on the car and then gets in the car. He just throws her out of the car. He doesn't kill her. He's not stabby. He's not Freddy Krueger or Jason. And so he goes on this little stalking spree looking for particular people. And that's all fine and dandy. But what he seems like is an insane person who's after Jamie Lee Curtis, etc. And then Dr. Loomis gets in the whole business, Donald Pleasance, and everything happens. And in the last 5 minutes, Jamie Lee Curtis stabs him in the eye with a coat hanger.
Nice.
He gets shot 6 times, I imagine, and falls off a balcony. And 20 seconds later, he's run off, only to set up 7 or 8 other crappy movies after that.
Nice. That's good.
Could it be possible that that's kind of character development for Michael, that he starts out one way and ends up another way, and that's some sort of...
I guess. I mean, but all it winds up... He's not supernatural until the last moment of the movie. And so there's no reason to believe in any... It's not a supernatural. It's not, like, again, it's not Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, it's not ghosts, or he's not dead, he's just a killer in an insane asylum. So why all of a sudden is he, at the end of the movie and for the rest of time, some kind of supernatural monster? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I love the movie. It's a brilliant movie. It's just that sticks in my craw all these years later.
Okay, I guess I'll go with a recent movie that I had moderately high hopes for, Nonstop with Liam Neeson. He's an air marshal, and every 20 minutes someone gets killed unless they comply with his demands, blah, blah, blah. So, again, a lot of build-up. Who's doing this? Who's behind all of this? And it turns out it's like – it really is one of the dumbest villain motivations. And it turns out it is a guy who feels that, of all things, the TSA is too lenient and security is too lenient that he needs to – like, blow up this plane so America will become more secure. It was really,
brother,
really dumb.
That sounds, I mean.
And there was another guy in cahoots who, again, these are like one guy is a former agent. The other guy's like a former Navy SEAL, and like he's in it for the money. It's just,
It seems like a so really dumb. Weird premise.
Made him a psycho.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Like, absolutely.
So you're sort of basically demonizing the people coming out of these agencies.
Don't even think that. Don't even think critically about it, Daryl, because it makes no sense. makes 0.0 sense.
Okay, but sun babies. Dave.
Solar babies.
Whatever.
I haven't read it yet.
Okay. You need to read and report to us immediately. But yeah. Not, I mean, just, yeah, just really, really dumb. Really super, super dumb. And you, again, why can't you have just a bad guy being a bad guy? You know, why do you have to dress it up as anything beyond that? So, yeah, really stupid. Really, really, really stupid. All right. Mac, what were you thinking?
All right, for mine, I am returning once again to the world of comic books for this one.
Okay.
In the mid-2000s, there was an indie comic. I don't know how most people have heard of it, but it's kind of under the radar. But it was called My Monkey's Name is Jennifer.
Fantastic.
This also fits Daryl's random animals category. But it's about a girl and her pet monkey, Jennifer, and they live in this small suburban town, and they have these crazy misadventures. And this goes on for like 3 or 4 issues, and then out of nowhere, the girl and Jennifer found this stairway leading up to the top of their house. They went up to the stairway, they opened up a door, and they're on the deck of a pirate ship. So it turns out their house, their entire small town they live in, that all this time for her entire life, she's living beneath the decks of a gigantic pirate ship.
What's that right?
That's really weird.
Yeah, okay.
But you know what? When you're describing that, and this makes me wonder, so this is like a corollary question to the ambush topic. That sounds a lot like Dark City. Does Dark City actually make any sense?
You know, I was just rewatching Dark City, which I will admit is one of my favorite
movies. I really like it. I really, really like it.
In the last X amount of years, that's a movie I really like. But you're right. I mean, on this,
it sounds a lot like Dark City.
I don't know what I was thinking when I was rewatching. Like, literally yesterday, I was just spooling through Dark City again. And it's like, I just wondered how they manufactured enough, like, food and water for the people who live
in the Does any of that
city.
Actually make a bit of damn sense? Yeah,
probably not. But I think
I don't think so, but it's still a fantastic and fun movie. It's just
they've got the whole underside of the city was all the water, right? So that could be the reservoir of water. They could use that to, like, grow food, maybe in some sort of plant.
When did they deliver it? You know, they don't have very much time in there. Like,
well, the characters go to that little diner place where they get the stuff off the conveyor belts. So that's the
true.
Aliens providing food to the populace.
That's true. That's true. And of course, they wouldn't know necessarily if they were eating in a different place or a different thing, because it would always just been the same.
Mm-hmm.
In the
Citizen Kane shot where the table stretches across the room, the food just kind of appears on the table as it does that. So I guess the aliens are also able to produce food out of the matter surrounding them through what's it called, their cuning or tuning?
Oh, gosh,
yeah,
I don't
tuning,
remember.
Tuning.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, tuning.
So that's another explanation, I suppose.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. Maybe it makes more sense than that movie, but I'm not sure. I mean, it's a remarkably similar description.
You know, I'm doing a little advanced research for an ambush topic here, Mac, too, and I just realized I may have fallen victim to an urban legend. I just had always heard that the Dr. Claw and the Inspector Gadget was actually the chief, but I guess that's not true.
What?
For some reason, I had heard that the identity of Dr. Claw and Inspector Gadget was Chief Quimby the whole time.
I don't think that was ever – yeah, that was never established.
I don't think it was ever established, but I remember hearing about it.
I think that's fan speculation going crazy.
So, yeah, unfortunately.
Because we never saw Dr. Claw, so it could have been Penny or Brain for all we know.
That's true. We never did see him.
That would have been great if it was Brain.
Or maybe it was like a Fight Club thing. Maybe Dr. Claw was like the Tyler Durden to Inspector Gadget.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. How's that? It blew your mind. All right. I think with that illuminating discussion, done. I think we are done with this podcast. So, Mac, Daryl, thanks. Happy birthday, Daryl.
Yes, happy birthday.
Mac, take us away.
Behavior determines existence. Stick with us, learn to serve the order, and you will achieve a decent life grid.